Well, good morning. Good morning. I love when the Christmas season starts and we know when it starts because Walmart and Target inform us that it starts. And right after the 4th of July, Christmas starts in. That's when you can purchase all of the... Does it seem like Christmas starts, the season starts earlier and earlier every year? Like, is it just me? That's a real thing, right? That it starts sooner and sooner. I know this year, I want to say early October, London started talking about Christmas and Santa Claus. Oh my goodness. Should I share this story? No one can spoil this to my daughter, okay? No, you have to promise right now, okay? So there is an app on cell phones now. It's called Kringle, or I think it's just called Kringle or Santa Claus. You just look it up. What it does is you can go to your living room and open up the app and hold the cell phone still, and it will superimpose Santa Claus. There's like 10 options of Santa Claus doing something in your living room. So it like does the lighting, does the whole thing. And so I filmed the living room while London's putting her pajamas on, brushing her teeth, getting ready for bed. And I filmed the living room. And so Santa Claus is standing there in front of our tree, checking his list and writing, goes, oh, very good. And over the top of it. So I ran in, I snuck back into the bathroom. I was like, London, look who is in our living room. And she was like, like tiptoed to the living room. She's like, oh, he's gone. And since we did that, every moment of every day has been about Santa Claus in the living room. Oh my goodness. And then I did another one last night that I didn't show her, but it was Ollie was sitting under the tree and Santa Claus walked across the room while Ollie wasn't looking. And Patty said we couldn't show that one because then she'd be like, Ollie got to see him and I didn't. So I'll have to make another one. But it is so funny. It is so cool to see a child's joy with Santa Claus. Right? Has anyone ever seen a child just like so over the top about Santa Claus? Oh yeah, so different. This year she's excited about Santa. Previous year she was terrified of Santa. We walk into the mall and if there's a Santa sitting down, like the second she saw, like all the way at the other end of the mall, she would do this thing, walk against the wall, like. And then just slide against the wall to walk the length of it to get around him. But this year, she's excited. Ollie, he still kind of doesn't get it, but he knows that he's going to get something if he sees a mall Santa. So, like, London will run, jump on the lap of Santa and, you know, talk to him. And Ollie will kind of walk up slowly. And Santa goes, oh, little boy, do you want to sit on my lap? And he goes, And he points at the pile of candy canes. Like, I know the end. Let's make that happen. So funny. Today's message is we're continuing our throwback series, and just looking at throwback messages in the Bible of past stories and connecting them to us today. And with that being said, today's message, the throwback is actually a 1983 film called The Christmas Story. Has anyone seen The Christmas Story? Has anyone not seen it? Okay, so Andrew, you haven't seen it? Okay, well, it's about a movie. It's a movie about a little boy. And so The Christmas Story, I have some points today, and I was really looking at this movie and realizing that every character in the movie has a one-minded focus motive that they're trying to go after. And I thought it was kind of interesting because it parallels the prodigal son. And I want to bring out points from the movie and points from the prodigal son and make it come together in our first Christmas message of throwback. Every kid, every person in the movie had a motive. And with that, I want you to think about, what's your motive? What are decisions that you make in your life based on motives that you have? Or maybe past experiences have shaped a perspective and you create decisions based on something from your past or even your present. Are you prone to making decisions based on something, a preconceived notion or a motive or a something that's going on currently? And that's what this message is about. It's kind of illuminating that. a couple of the people that I'm not going to really bring up from the movie, but I just thought they're notable mentions, if you will. The creeper kid in the movie that was mean and just wanted to hurt people with, like, he was just always angry. I just thought that was a funny kid. And he was always hurting people because he found out in the movie, just really subtly, but because he was hurting at home. He found out through one phone call that his mom hurt him at home, and that's why he was trying to hurt everyone else in the movie. The small angry kid, I call him the Napoleon Complex child. He's a shorty there, and he has this like little hat, and he's always like, ah! He's always like he's gonna fight, but he never actually gets in a fight the whole movie, but everyone runs from him. The little brother, oh, God bless his soul. The little brother wanted to belong so badly, but everyone else caused him to not really fit in. Like, the mom was always putting, like, the giant layers on, and he was just, like, running along. The most random scene in the movie that has nothing to do with anything is he climbs under the kitchen sink in the drawer right there, and then he's just like, can I have some milk? And the mom gives him the milk and then shuts the door. And then she's like, dinner time, opens it out, and the kid walks out just holding the empty glass of milk, and the dad's like, he keeps reading it. It's just like notable mentions. If you haven't seen the movie, it's bizarre, but it's a classic. And so I wanted to look at kind of a interspliced characters and how they fit in together. And so primarily we're just going to be in Luke 15 today. So if you have your Bibles, go ahead and open up to Luke 15 and stay there for the duration of the message. It's Luke 15, 11 through 32. I believe I'm out of the NIV translation. So if you want to direct your attention to the screen, you're already ahead of me. Great. Jesus continued, there was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, Father, give me my share of the estate. So he divided the property between them. Not longer after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed the pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods and the pigs that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. Number one, it's better to give than receive. It's better to give than receive. In the story, it's obvious. If we had to choose between the kid that got everything that ended up bankrupt or the dad that gave, was able to bless his child and say, here you go, 9 times out of 10, we'd probably pick the dad saying, here you go, because he gets his son back in the end. It's better to give than receive. It's better to give than receive. Ralphie is the main character in The Christmas Story, and all he wanted was a Red Ryder, carbon action, 200-shot, range model air rifle with a compass in the stock, and this thing could tell time. Said it like, don't shoot your eye out. That's the line that's repeated the most in the whole movie. He's like, I want this, I want this, I want this. And his entire motive of the entire movie is getting this rifle. And because of that, him just desiring it, wanting it, wanting it, wanting it, he started to slack off in his school. He was losing his grades. If you watch, he's not really paying attention to anything except for like bandits running through the yard and things happening outside. Like, because of his motive of wanting this so badly, he was losing out on things. His family was having the family atmosphere, but he was so consumed with what his desire was that Christmas that he was missing out on everything else around him. You know, he was just so focused in on the silly rifle that he was going to get anyways. But it consumed him. It was about manipulating his family. Remember that one scene where he gets his mom's magazine that she reads through and he puts the advertisement in the middle so that when she opens up, she could read through it. Conversations at breakfast, instead of engaging in family's conversations, it's how can I manipulate my family to understand that I want this? are we trying to get something or give something? There's something about giving that just brings joy. I know when we give something to London Ollie, I mean, as silly it is to as grand it is, their eyes light up every time. You know, it's like you give Ollie like a broken remote so he can play with. It's like at no cost to us, it broke. It's like his eyes are just walking around and he'll start like marching with it. You know, it's just kids just do strange things. But that brings so much more joy than like if I got anything. Like giving him that brings joy. It's better to give than get. My question was that I wrote, what are we chasing after that is really costing us? By giving God our lives, we received oftentimes far more than we could ever imagine. B.C. Forbes said, Christmas is a tonic for our souls. It moves us to think of others rather than of ourselves. It directs our thoughts to giving. Henry Nouwen, I like to quote him a lot. He's one of my favorite authors. When we honestly ask ourselves which person in our lives means the most to us, we often find out that it is those who, instead of giving advice, solutions, or cures, have chosen rather to share our pain and touch our wounds with a warm and tender hand. Mother Teresa said, it's not how much we give, but how much love we put into giving. Man, such great quotes. All right, moving to number two with this verse 17, continuing on, prodigal son. When he came to his senses, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have food to spare, and here I am starving to death. I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants. So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. That's where the message title comes from. Remember when God ran. Point number two, run to forgiveness. Run to forgiveness. My wife and I play this game. It's really, I play this game and she doesn't like this game. sorry for sharing this, but usually what happens in our marriage is I do something or say something stupid, and then I race to say I'm sorry because I realize how stupid I'm being, and she doesn't like that. She's like, give me some time. I'm like, no, I want forgiveness now, because really, I want to feel better. And that's just not how it works. It's that time. And I'm just letting you know, babe, I race to forgiveness. I'm just digging myself deep right now. Are we running to forgiveness? Are we running to forgiveness? I was thinking about the little boy in the Christmas Story movie. And his entire plot sequence of the whole movie is just, like, half his scenes are running. That is the movie for him. Half his scenes have 50 jackets on, and his arms, his mom pushes them down, and they pop back up because he has so many jackets on. And he's just like this, and everyone else is so far ahead of him. Like, you see everyone else run, and then, like, wait for it. Then he's like, guys, wait up. You know, that's the story of this little kid in this movie. His entire motive is trying to fit in, trying to catch up, but because he's stuck with so many layers, doesn't really quite ever catch up. one of my favorite scenes, and it's so true, is like your mom bundles you all the way up and you're like ready to go outside and play, and then like right when that happens, you're like, oh, I have to go to the bathroom. Has any parents or children experienced this in their lives? Every time. London, like we're like, do you have to go to the bathroom before we leave anywhere? That's just our routine. Do you have to go to the bathroom? No, I'm good. We get into the car, we like pull out of the driveway. Dad, I have to go to the bathroom now. Okay. And I was thinking about this little boy in this movie. He was always stuck behind. He was always left behind because of the layers. Illustratively, let me pull it over to this side. Are we stuck running the race of God's purpose in our lives and we're always left behind because of how many layers we have on us? Layers that we need to remove and forgive of people. Layers represent unforgiveness, if you will. Things that hurt us that we're still holding on to. And I don't want to say, I learned at a young age, when you're able to forgive, you can run so much faster in life. It's just true. Yeah. Even on a non-spiritual level. Physically, doctors say, if you have bitterness and hurt in your life, your body actually wears down faster. Did you know that? Doctors say, from a medical perspective, if you forgive people, physically, your body does better. I thought that was wild. Like, people that aren't even Christians say, hey, you should forgive people because they'll help you physically. What? Like, God wired us that way? That it blows my mind. Are you covered in layers of unforgiveness that prevents you from running with the big kids? Paul Bozzi said, forgiveness does not change the past, but it does enlarge the future. Isn't that good? Oh my goodness, I wish I wrote that. Forgiveness is a gift to yourself. That was in A Course in Miracles. Robert Brault, that's a weird name to say. Some forgive and forget, more forgive and remember, but most forgive and remind. Whoa, you said it, not me. That's funny. For all those on the podcast, Miranda Rios said, those are called wives. Robert Brault also said, life becomes easier when you learn to accept an apology you never got. Man, that's so good. That is so good. Can you forgive someone for an apology you never get? Oh my goodness. All right, continuing with point number 3 in the prodigal son. Verse 21. The son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. And then Beyonce said, put a ring on his finger. Just kidding. Just a few Beyonce fans? Okay. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Verse 23. Bring the fatted calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. 24. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. So they began to celebrate. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. Look at the positioning of the house. The younger son realizes what was wrong, comes back to the father's home. But the older son is in close proximity to the father's house. You just preach on that. Meanwhile, the older son was in the fields. When he came near to the house, he heard the music and dancing. It must have been a loud party. So he called one of the servants and asked him what was going on. He didn't venture into the father's house. He asked someone else, what's going on? Your brother has come, he replied, and your father has killed a fatted calf because he has him back home safe and sound. Number 3, above and beyond. Above and beyond. The older son didn't venture to the father's house. Said he called a servant. And I think it's notable to see what the servant's response was. It wasn't the response of the heart of the father. It was just the facts. Just the facts. He returned home and they killed the best cow that we were saving up. And so everything else is left to interpretation because the servant just gave the facts. This point is kind of interesting. Because sometimes we can get engrossed with checking off a task list in our life, in ministry, in our job, in life, and just say, do this, do this, do this, do this. And we can miss it because God's not after our task list. He's after our heart intertwined with the task list. But if you don't have the heart with it, you miss out. You miss it. You miss it. And so from the Christmas story, this point really intertwines really lovely with the father of the Christmas story. He has the quirkiest storylines, like with the dogs running after him, like just random. Like, how did the writer come up with this stuff? Like, was this his life? Like, maybe it was his life growing up. I don't know. But so the dad was so concerned with just getting things done, making sure food was on the table, it was paid for, his work was done, he kept the dogs that were barking after him outside. It was like everything became a task list to him. Are my kids okay? Check. Is my wife okay? Check. Am I going to work? Check. I'm good. And then something happens. He enters a trivia contest because he loves trivia, and he wins this silly lamp that's just ridiculous. And like it's the first point in the movie he has joy on his face, right? He's so excited for this lamp that's shaped like a leg, if you haven't seen the movie. And he puts it in the window, and he has the whole family like positioning it. He clears off the shelves, and he goes outside, and he's bringing his neighborhood in, like, look at the lamp, look at the lamp. Like, what is that? I won a contest, you know? And his life lights up because at one point in his life, it's no longer task list. His heart and his skill sets connect with what he does in life. And he's changed. And as crazy as the lamp was and all that, I'm just trying to illustratively speak for a second here. Have you connected your heart with what's at hand? Because something happens. And I almost want to say it's like magical, kind of like that Christmas magical spirit in the air. You know, it's like just almost touchable, that joy that's just there, you know? When you connect the heart of the Father with what you're called to do, it's no longer a tedious task that just needs to get done. It's the joy of the Lord. Just something happens. Okay, I'm going to give you something practical right now in this. Does anyone know the four-part decision-making model? It's bad, good, better, best. Bad, good, better, best. So in every decision we make in this life, every task we have, everything that goes on, we fall into one of those categories. You learn this in, I don't know where I learned it, but it was along the way, and I think it was business-oriented, but you learn that everything you do is in one of these categories. So let's apply it to taking out the trash, because this is something that happens in my household a lot. Bad, good, better, best. A bad decision is saying, hey, babe, I'll take it out later. It's already stinky, the poopy diaper's in there, you know, whatever. The lid's propped open because there's so much trash in it. Bad decision is just not taking it out. That's a bad decision, right? So, yes. I admit it. These are real situations. A good decision, so that's a bad decision. A good decision is taking out the trash. But unfortunately, most of us end up in a good decision, but the flip side is a good decision is one step away from a bad decision. So a good decision, taking it out, okay? Better decision is taking it out and checking the other trash cans and emptying those too. That's a better decision. Because you're still going to have to take them out later. Better decision. The best decision is taking them out and putting liners back in when you finish. I love that. That was the most applause from women I've ever had in this church to date. Best decision, but I'm not done. Taking out the trash, putting liners in, and following up with the question, is there anything else that needs to happen? That's the best decision that can happen. So I know we can get wrapped up on trash cans right now, but that's not really the point of this part. What in your life are decision-making models? What are things that you need to get done? And when the heart of the Father comes together and comes into unity with what you're doing, the decision model is there. Bad, good, better, best. Because when the heart of the Father is connected to your heart, all of a sudden you're striving to go above and beyond, which is the title of this point. Above and beyond. When we come together for an event or community outreach or whatever it is, putting on church for people that might not know Jesus. Bad, good, better, best. Is it good just showing up? Or is it best saying, man, I want to do this and this because my heart's connected to the Father? What does it line up as? All right. Fourth and last point. Continue in verse 28 with the prodigal son. The older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeying your orders, yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. His issue isn't really having an animal killed for his friends. We need to understand that. Sometimes we lash out and say irrational things because it's like, I wanted this. No, it's a heart issue. Something else is going on that's deeper. Verse 30, continue on. But when this son of yours, who has squandered your property with prostitutes, come home, you killed a fatted calf for him. 31, my son, the father said, you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad, because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. Number 4, the heart of the Father. The heart of the Father. In the film, Christmas Story, this is the mother of the story. Her motive and drive is bringing unity and peace and love to all these wild personalities. That's her entire goal of the movie. In every aspect, it's pulling them all together. It's correcting the son when he says a swear word. It's bringing comfort to the youngest child who doesn't really fit in and saying, it's okay, I accept you, even though you're weird. You can stay under the cupboard and drink milk. You know, it's with the father, he loves turkey, so she makes turkey. It's even when the dogs eat the turkey and she says, let's go get some food together, and she's accepting of it. It's she's this peacemaker. The heart of the Father. God is calling us to be peacemakers, joy bringers, and faith springers. A couple of those words are made up, but that's okay. Yeah, I just wanted something that rhymed. It's a Matt Russell word. He is calling you to share these aspects beyond the words of truth through actions. Maybe it's baking some cookies and taking it over to someone's house that was just on your mind. Saying, man, I was thinking about you. We had some cookies. We want to take it to you. It's these actions that show the heart of the Father. How do you take the heart of the Father to people you love and care about? What's your skill set? What is it? I know I'm gonna pick on my wife one more time this morning. How she shares the heart of the Father is she's creative. She does things creatively. She paints or draws or builds something, makes something. Like even with London, when London wanted to become a mermaid. It's a true story. And London goes, I want to be a mermaid that has a tail, but I can walk too, like Ariel. And so she like drew it out and said, I want to look like this. And then my wife figured out how to make a mermaid tail so that my daughter could become a mermaid. True story. It's these things. How do you bring the heart of the Father through your skills to people around you? It's going beyond making the change in your life to exemplify these 4 points, but it's taking these through you to people also. God wants you to change, but he also wants you to become the change for someone else to make a change. It's kind of like a two-step process. God's after your heart, but he's also after the heart that you're connected to, someone else's heart. Charles Swindoll said, I cannot even imagine where I would be today were it not for the handful of friends who have given me a heart full of joy. Let's face it, friends make life a lot more fun. Steve Maraboli said, a kind gesture can reach a wound that only compassion can heal. A kind gesture. Worship team, if you want to make your way up. This Christmas, this winter, it can be just like any other. It can fall into routine of life and everything else. It could just fall into alignment and just be like every other Christmas we have. It might be a little bit different because we've lost loved ones. It might be different because someone can't visit us, but you can allow that to happen. But I really believe God's calling you to something more this Christmas. What thing in your life do you need to work on? Is it forgiveness? Is it kind gestures? Is it showing God's love? Is it capturing the heart of the Father? Is it going above and beyond the simple tasks of life? God is calling you to make a change. But step two is facilitating that change for someone else. Make the change, be the change. I love that saying, it's so catchy. I want like a shirt that says that or something. In just a moment, our ushers are gonna pass out communion down the aisles as we enter back into worship. And what I want to happen is this. Let's remain seated, get our communion, but silently reflect on God. Really think about, God, what are you calling me to step into in my life personally and step out of my comfort zone and do? As we take our communion, our bread and juice, remember that Christ is actually that. God said at one point, I'm going to make the change and become fully human and fully God. But not only that, I'm going to make a way for people to become the change also. I'm going to die on the cross. That's what communion is. It's us remembering what God did. That's all. So let's go ahead and start passing that out. Lord, stir in our hearts this Christmas. Stir them up. As we take this communion, let us remember what you did for us. As we enter into this worship, let us praise you and worship you. Because you decided to make a change and step out of heaven onto earth and become like us to give us a chance to enter heaven with you. Give us a chance for our lives to be changed on this earth. In your name, amen. Let's take communion.